leaders. What keeps you up at night? Welcome to The Sweet Spot, the podcast series that expands the traditional term of what a boss is to tackle some of the most important issues in business. From business as usual and growing your market to everyday leadership issues or handling one in 100 year events, we aim to provide ongoing inspiration and education for CEOs, founders, management, shareholders, and leaders of every stripe. The Sweet Spot is the future of work and business.
Hi, I'm Laura Eyre.
And I'm Emily Svetlinak.
And today we speak to Lisa Hoyt, founder and CEO of the Hoyt Organization, which Lisa established in 1996. Based in California, Lisa and her team are sought after strategic communications experts specializing in issue management, crisis communications, and media training. She works with leading companies across real estate, technology, finance, healthcare, luxury lifestyle, and professional services. Her work spans national and international borders, and she has managed many watershed issues for her clients. Lisa is a member of the Forbes Comms Council and is also part of the Public Relations Global Network alongside Alexander Piar.
Welcome, Lisa, and thank you for joining us today.
Having met you through the Public Relations Global Network and getting to see you in Singapore last year for us was just such a joy. I think we found our family and our people. We feel like we've got a global family of PR and issue management people to draw from your expertise and learn from everybody. So for us, I think we just want to talk to exactly what is an issue, and it means different things to different people. You know, in your experience, do you think that many leaders and boards are actually prepared for an issue?
I don't know that they're actually prepared for them, but when you reframe the question, it's part of their everyday life. A board and a CEO, they wouldn't have gotten to that level of their career if they didn't know how to solve challenges. That's their job. So pushing them into the crisis management side of the industry is actually not that far of a stretch if you can get them to understand what a crisis actually is. And I can't tell you how many times I've had people say, oh, we don't need crisis management. We have it all handled. Okay. No, you don't, because by definition, a crisis is something that you don't expect. But what if you reframed that and you put in place a program that allowed them to be okay with expecting the unexpected? Because that's what it is. It's a bit like raising a teenager. You never know what you're going to get when they walk in the door at the end of the day. It just is totally. I've been doing this for over 25 years, and I can tell you every time we get called into a crisis, it's 100% different than anything because our world is different. We do things differently today. The cell phones, you mentioned that in a call. There's no way you can get away from recordings, from body cams, from people taking photos of whatever incidents is going on. So how can you corral that? You can't. But you can put bookends around it to protect the company. And I can tell you, every time somebody has to mitigate an issue, it's a different process.
And you obviously have a lot of experience in the space. Without naming names, no naming and shaming here, but can you give us a sense of the range of issues that you've managed in the past and any that stand out as being particularly memorable?
They all stand out. I started off my crisis career at a dinner in Chicago, sitting next to a CEO, and I happened to know him, and I said, do you know you have a toxic waste spill in your property in Southern California? Oh, no, we don't. Oh, yes, you do. And I said, not only do you have it, but you actually had your property manager deny that you had it, and you are getting killed in the media. And he looked at me and he said, how would you like to develop our crisis communications plan for us? Love it. He said, call me when we get back to LA. And we put it together. And that launched into literally individual trainings on every properties at the property level, training the regional managers, and then working with the C-suite on what that meant. So that's how I started my career in crisis management. It ballooned from there to handling a hurricane in Florida that literally wiped out properties. The key takeaway from there is we were not in Florida. It's not like you guys, it's it's a lot of land here. Chances are your management won't be where it happens. What we discovered from that is we were trying to get the property back up and operating. It was a shopping center. The community wasn't ready to go shopping. They didn't even have housing. So we pivoted, turned the shopping center into a touchdown for all the Red Cross, the community leaders that needed to get in gas, clothes, pets, all that kind of stuff. We turned it into a community hub so that everybody knew they could go there to get resources. What did that do for our client? It turned them into the salvation for the community so that they became a helping hand. It isn't always that way. We've also handled one of the more famous ones that we handled, you may actually have heard of them, is we had a terrorist shooting back in San Bernardino, Southern California, at the tail end of 2015. When we were originally called, we thought it was a shooting. With all due respect, and you guys know this, today shootings are getting more and more common. So my counsel to CEOs is it's not if, it's when. So be prepared for the when. And I mean that W-H-E-N, not W-I-N. We thought it was a very small contained shooting. It turns out it was actually a terrorist activity. They ended up killing over 14 people in the span of 3 hours. They wanted us on site. We couldn't even get there. The challenge with that one is I discovered my role went from being a crisis communications counselor to actually being an advocate for the clients that were impacted and explaining things to the media. This particular site had two buildings on it that were 180,000 square feet. Where the shooting took place was in a conference center that was on the same site, but a completely separate building. So many of the 550 employees that were actually employed on the site didn't even know that it had happened because it was in a separate building. We ended up having to shut down the building. 23 people were killed. We had to shut down the park. We being the Inland Regional Center. We had to shut down the parking garage, evacuate it so that those 550 people, they were stuck there. They couldn't get their cars out of the garage. So many of the things that happen in a major crisis like that require figuring out the details so that you can get the employees back home, so that you can get their clients who were mentally disabled adults to understand that they hadn't gone under. And the biggest part was getting the media to understand how the site was designed. They kept thinking that it was the Inland Regional Center itself that had been closed. No, it wasn't. It was the conference center next door. So I found our team here actually sending out site maps to reporters because they just didn't understand. So a lot of the control that we offered initially was simply correcting misinformation. And that is vital when you've got a major issue like that. Some of the other things that we've handled everything from child kidnappings, which are horrific, to bomb threats, to some of them are kind of funny. We had a woman in a restaurant have a pipe bomb that was delivered. So the manager picked up the pipe bomb and walked outside. Oh, my God. She didn't know any better. She was actually doing what she thought was best. She was getting it out of the restaurant. So that's where the preparation comes in play. No matter where something happens, the people who are the CEOs, management on wherever that location is, I don't care what kind of crisis it is, it happens somewhere. So whoever owns that somewhere needs to be involved in the planning to make things move forward. Oh, it's scary. Absolutely scary.
It's very scary. And just being that one source of truth and that constant in a moment of crisis like that is so important. And my heart's beating as you talk through all these things because that is so devastating and heartbreaking, some of those issues that you've dealt with. And in a similar but perhaps a bit of a smaller scale sense in New Zealand, it's getting quite, there's a lot of anxiety, I think, in the local market. The crime rate is increasing. There has been a number of natural disasters as well. I mean, we're known as the Shaky Isles in New Zealand, and we've helped clients through the devastating impacts of quite major earthquakes. And as you were saying, you know, sometimes it's a matter of people have had to just leave their digital devices and their briefcase in a cafe and run. So what do they do in that instance to a business that is now unable to continue? Or that there's just a whole raft of issues. And I think for you, it's really just how do you maintain your sense of calm and how do you manage the emotions? I mean, like you, we've had clients on the phone that are in tears dealing with these issues because they're going into a state of shock. So you become that person that is not just the communications counselor, but the counselor.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you manage your state?
I have three teenagers and I raised three boys. So pretty much there's not much that could actually flat me. But what I've discovered when we handle situations like this for the client is our job is to maintain a sense of calm. Why? Because they can't. They will, but then you got to watch for the signs that you know they need to go outside of the room and have a good cry because their employees, their clients, their family, they are counting on them to lead them through whatever the crisis is. And what we do during the crisis can help them get back into business faster because we've been able to manage the message. And I hate using that word because I think they're it's nomenclature and lingo, but you mentioned an earthquake. Well, I'm in Southern California. We have a fair share of them out here. Here's how we can help. When you have an earthquake and say it's at a retail center, even with COVID, part of helping is we did the Northridge earthquake 15 years ago, and a lot of our clients couldn't even get to the site. So the rule of thumb is if a media, and of course, all the media is out there, we can help them shape the story. Think about it. We had a number of camera crews showing up at the shopping center because it had collapsed. Why are they at a shopping center? There's no people there. What I did is I suggested to the media crews, why don't you go three blocks that way where we've had apartment buildings that have pancaked? Why did I do that? Number one, it takes the focus off of the client, which was a shopping center developer. Number two, what does it do? It points to the people that really need help. And it's a visual on the screen. So we call attention to what really needs help in the middle of a crisis. And that, in essence, if we can do that, what does that do? People who really need help can get help faster. They find housing. They get food. They get help for their children who have no idea what's going on. And then they get back in business and back to life a little faster. And if we can do that, then I don't care what we get paid. We've done our community a service because we're helping them return to normal.
And I guess if we think about that instance, and you touched on it before as well, there's a balancing act between talking to the media, keeping them informed, perhaps also a large element nowadays with misinformation that spreads quite quickly, you know, the likes of TikTok and other social media.
Everything.
Information spreads at an enormous rate. When we talk to our clients, and we've done a lot of it, especially with the view of preparing for the unknown, where you just don't know what's coming your way. But how do you see media training for clients, specifically for issues and crisis situations? How do you see that playing a role in how you approach things, how you prepare your clients for what you don't really know, whether or not it's coming their way?
There's a couple of different scenarios. If you've had the lead up and you've got a client who believes in this, they must be media trained. It means they need what I call the leaders. Those are those little snippets of sentences that give the CEO a chance to think. It's something that says, let's look at this another way, and then you pivot. Or you can say something like, we're moving ahead now, and you pivot to whatever the messaging is. Not all people have had the in-depth training that it takes to make that happen, and they may not be available. So what happens if you've got someone who doesn't know how to do that? You can either do a really quick media training and run them through it. If they're adept at it and they can think fast, they'll be okay. Or postpone the interview. Remember, one of the things that most people are deathly afraid of is talking to the media. But again, if you reshape the form and you let them know, they're coming to you for information. You control the interview. You get to tell the media if you don't want to answer the question, you don't have to. All you have to do is pivot by saying, you know what? We really don't have that information yet, but here's the information that we do have. And you move forward with what they do know and move on that way. And then you pivot again by saying, yes, we know we're in the middle of this if it's an earthquake, but we're moving ahead now. And in fact, 1, 2, 3, these are the steps that we're taking. So you can actually control an interview and manage it fairly succinctly if you've got somebody who knows how to do it.
Having a backup is quite helpful too, isn't it? I suppose you have the one leader in the business who is the person who has the spokesperson hat on. They know the inner workings of the company. They've been through this before. But the leaders that you mentioned, you know, we call them our top five key messages, and having that at the very start of an issue, important, and constantly revisiting those as well as the issue unfolds, as more information comes to light, just interrogate that message. What are we telling people, not just media, but their customers, general public, all of our social platforms? How are we saying something and what are we saying? And is the timing right? You know, is that something that your team just constantly reworks with your clients over time as well?
We do. But remember, there's more to the story than that. It's also, where are you sharing it? And what we do when we do crisis, just communications management in general, for example, suppose a company is being involved in a hostile takeover. I'm just throwing that out. What is the most critical audience that you need to record with, you need to talk to first? Is it your shareholders? You bet. Is it your C-suite? Is it your employees? So map out, and you can do this in less than 15 minutes. What are the key audiences that you need to talk to first, second, and third? And what are the channels that you're going to use to get to them? We had a publicly held company whose founder had passed away unexpectedly, and he had turned the company over to his son that nobody actually knew much about, and he didn't have much credibility. Okay, how are we going to do that? Number one, we got him media trained, communications trained, speech trained. You're not going to do that with somebody in a week, especially if they've never done it, but you can get it started. When we realized that probably wasn't going to go as well as we had hoped, we put together a private call for the investors. Well, it's not real private when you got 300 of them. We set up a Zoom call and we surrounded the chairman with all of his key C-suite officers, the CFO, the investor relations person, that all of the C-suites were on there, as well as the director of investor relations. And we set it up. We gave him his comments. We rehearsed him so many times, I could have given the speech. And it went extremely well because we put it in a controlled environment and we made it happen. And we surrounded him by experts so he didn't get stuck. And the comments we got after that was awesome. All of the investors were like, okay, they've got this under control. So we switched the whole track of this particular company. Then we rolled it out to the other shareholders with an e-blast newsletter. Then we set up 3 interviews with key medias in 3 different markets. They hit all at the same time, even though they had different slants to the story, and it righted the ship. So it all depends on how you roll out the plan, but you can do it.
Mm. And that is so true. It all depends how you approach a situation, how you prepare your people, depending on where their strengths lie and where, you know, they might naturally have instincts that could lead them down the wrong track. When you think about the channels that we use these days, obviously, there's so much happening in the world constantly, and social media has been a big part of that. In a good way, more information coming to people quicker and things coming out that need to come out, but misinformation does spread. How do you see the role of an organization in when they approach their planning for channels to use? How do you see social media playing a role in that? And what are some of the good, bad, and the ugly things that you do need to be aware of as a leader when you are faced with a comms strategy, let's say, and social media plays a part of that. What is the thinking that needs to go into how you present your brand to the social world?
It is ready to roll, literally. Planned in advance, that can be customized for whatever the situation is, and make sure somebody is monitoring all your channels. And that's the biggest downfall that I have. They turn it over to a communications manager who only looks at it for 20 minutes every other day, and they miss something that comes through. We did have a situation with a company in Texas, and the name of one of their employees was literally the exact same name as a woman who had been indicted for murder. Yes. And of course, all the, I hate her, she needs to be hanged, all that kind of stuff started showing up on the company page. Now, and this poor woman. So we did a couple of things. We contacted the head of their Dallas office and said, this is going on. Here's our response. We need you to approve it. And the response was, you have the wrong person. This is the same name, but you have the wrong person. We shut down the office because there were death threats, and she was sent home for the day with pay. And every time a response went up, we put in the same thing. I've forgotten, it's been so long, but it was literally, this is the wrong person. And she was in Texas. The person that they were looking for was in California. You know, this person is in Texas. The person that's allegedly been convicted of murder was in California. Please take down their post. And we were able to turn it around in about 2 hours. But we closed the office and sent her home with pay because you don't know. So you've got to be on top of it for starters and have your team ready to roll. You can have prepared canned responses sitting somewhere on a Google Doc, wherever you file your social medias, so that if you need to react instantly, you can.
That is so right. I mean, if I go back to when I entered this career, there was no social media. Businesses were not on Facebook. So it's just another channel that we now have to be so cognizantly aware of all the time. And I guess the flip side of that is if you're trying to help a company to build its credibility and its reputation, they're a global entity. And I'm thinking of an example at the moment where the marketing function doesn't really talk to the C-suite, and so they have their own mandate, and social media is a fun tool to promote some campaigns and start a narrative that doesn't really reflect where the company wants to try and go at a different level and through different channels. So that consistency and bringing those messages together between the marketing, the comms team, and the C-suite is so vital. I mean, what surprises you these days? Is there anything really that does surprise you?
Not much. Really, truly. the one thing that does tend to surprise me is then when we're working with, I graciously say this because I love all my CEOs, they are running a company, so they're not necessarily they're not going to be looking at Facebook and sending out tweets every day. Some of them do. Some of them love Twitter. Well, now it's X, which is a whole different can of worms I'm not even going to get into. So they're not necessarily in touch with the impact that social media has, and they don't understand the damage. Well, they may understand the damage, but they're not themselves doing the technical part of it. So having them connected with that team is critical so that they can literally call someone and say, this is happening. Here's what we need to do. Here's the response. Go. And that's a measurement of success if you can do that. The other thing that's been very helpful is to have a sample landing page. Suppose you've got a product that's has a recall, or somebody has died while they're using it. Get a sample landing page up so that if you have to do a recall, there's a website that they can go to get all the information. Once you've got all of the web design done and the back end ready to go and it's ready to post on your website, you've already done most of the work. All you need to do in order to post it is correct what's being done, what the name of the product is. You've got everything hooked up, and then it's just a quick go. So there's a lot of prep that can be done in advance that speeds it to a successful conclusion from the get-go.
And you touched on it just now, but it's almost like a fire safety drill, getting your leaders and boards and C-suite and everyone actually in a company, no matter what level they're at, prepared and knowing what to do when things go wrong. What do you see as your top three things that need to be part of a risk mitigation strategy to be ready to roll out when things do need to go fast?
The top three, number one, we work off of a prepare, respond, and recover roadmap. And when you simplify it, everybody goes, okay, I get that. Number one, make sure you have your communications tree locked and loaded. Make sure everybody has everybody's cell phone, private channels if they need to get a hold of anybody, all of the latest and greatest of the information that you need for the people that you need to communicate with immediately. The second one would be get everybody trained on what the process is. And the third is make sure you have a series of responses that you can go out with. You can do all of that in advance. I can tell you right now, I could work with a CEO, come up with the five major questions that they would need to answer any situation that they're in, craft the five answers that go with that, with the leaders, how to pivot, what to say, and I can guarantee you we could put them on the air and they would do an awesome job. Because if you've given them a roadmap and you've trained them to move forward and they understand that when you talk to the media, it's just a conversation. You don't have to give them any information at all. You have the right to say, we're right in the middle of something that's very, very serious. We don't have all the details yet, but what we do know is X, Y, and Z. And as soon as I have more, I will circle back to you at our 5 o'clock press conference or whatever the communication is. So it's actually a very simple process. It's just that we do it every day, and they've never done it.
Thank you, Lisa. I think that's given our listeners some really great takeaway points and insights into just being at the front line and in the eye of the storm and just asking yourself, you know, do I really have it prepared? Have I thought of every scenario? Have I got my crisis plan locked and loaded? Who am I going to call if something hits straight away? Have I thought about that process? So thank you, Lisa. So appreciate your time and joining Emily and I on the C-Suite Spot today.
You're very welcome.
If people want to learn a bit more about you and your organization, where can they go? Where can they find you?
Hoytorg.com, HOYTORG.com. And of course, I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, all the major channels, X. Let's not talk about that, but there you go.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you, Lisa.
Really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome, ladies. This was a great way to start my day, or your day.
Until next time. Thank you for joining our conversation with Lisa today. Our latest white paper, 2023, The Perfect Storm, 23 Bad Habits Your Board Should Change in the Era of Polycrisis, is available to download at www.companycrisis.co.nz.
We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please like, review, or share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. If you'd like to follow us, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn under Alexander PR, or follow the links in the show notes below. Until next time, thank you for listening.